All right. Thank you for coming tonight. This is the EFF panel, Gathering of the Guilds. I'll let the guests introduce themselves.
My name is Trevor. We started the Gathering of the Guilds last year as an effort to bring the online gaming community to Dragon Con, which has not really had much of a presence at the convention until now. We'll be talking about a number of topics this evening, the main one being the buying and selling of virtual items for real money. Should be a pretty lively discussion tonight. I see some smiling faces. Yeah, all right. But again, my name is Trevor. Let's go on ahead and do some more introductions.
My name's Normal. I'm just a typical player, just here to throw in my two cents.
The token player. Okay. My name's Ilanka. I'm general manager of online community for Simutronics Corporation at Play.net. We have games Gemstone 3, Dragon Realms, Cyber Strike, Modus Operandi. I have to list them all, otherwise I get somebody who gets really upset in the audience. Hercules and Xena, Alliance of Heroes, and we're also working on a new game called Hero's Journey, among other things.
I'm Brian Green. I'm a co-founder of Near Death Studios. We relaunched Meridian 59 after we purchased it from 3DO.
My name is Catherine Anderson-Davila. I am the editor-in-chief of WomenGamers.com, which is the largest female gaming site on the net. And if you have any questions about some of the upcoming MMORPGs that are coming, I can probably get you up to speed.
My name is Waylon Adams, and I am a guide on EverQuest on the server called Zegany. I'm sure that's going to get a little bit of a
fall. I'm a dog to avoid the Rotten Tomatoes.
All right, well, before we jump into things, let's just have a show of hands. How many EverQuest players do we have? All right,
quite
a few of them.
Oh,
man. How about some of the older ones? EverQuest, Ashron's Call, Ultima Online, okay, Dark Age of Camelot. Yeah, got quite a few. Okay, good. Let's see, how many are looking forward to Star Wars Galaxies? Yeah, okay, great.
How many Play.net players are here? Any of the Simutronics games? One? Okay.
How about...
We'll talk about it.
How many people have actually heard of Meridian 59?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, hey, look at that!
Yeah, so we know some history.
You'd be surprised how many people haven't never heard of it, so...
Seems to be the game that started it all.
Yeah.
All right, now, how many people in the audience have bought or sold virtual items online for real money? How prevalent does that seem to be? Okay. We're probably going to see those numbers increase as time goes by. Yeah, really.
Account name. Options currently going. You know?
That particular issue seems to be pretty polarized. There are a lot of people out there who are pretty much against it. They think that it takes away from the game's experience. Others are of the opinion that it let the players do as they will. Of course, then there's the terms of service agreement that we all click the checkbox for. You know, when we check to play, and we all know what that says concerning that particular issue. So, let's hear it. Who would like to open things up? Go ahead.
Is there a... There we go. He's got it. Personally, I don't think it makes a difference whether you're giving an item to a point, a personal point, or selling.
Right. Went on ahead and right. Right.
I think there's a difference between those two.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Oh, you've got a. Wanted to hear some. Okay. Is anyone here of the opinion that we should steer clear of that? That the terms of service should be enforced to an extent? Yeah. Let's. Right. Yeah. Some of the strategies that some of the game companies have used include the no drop, minimum level requirements, things like that. Do we feel that that's effective, or does it draw away from the games? The no drop. Go ahead.
Just on the subject of selling online games, or selling items, I kind of think that whether you agree or disagree, I think it does detract from the game as a whole. The gaming company is generally trying to create a gaming experience, at least in my opinion, and that involves tight control of items sometimes money, who can finish quests, and these are pretty important items in terms of their control and what players. Gaming experience is like, and for me anyway, and this is only my personal opinion, but for me, I think that does tend to ruin people's gaming experience when they can't survive a game just by playing it, where they have to be in an Uber guild, where they have to have real money to buy online items or buy whole character accounts. I do think it makes a serious, it skews the game experience in favor of those people and against someone who may just come in and try to play a game.
Right.
To me, it's a significant issue, and I think it's important. Right. I think it should be avoided for that. Yeah, I'm just.
Oh, Go ahead.
Participate in a number of other online games, Diablo 2, Dungeon Siege, and similar multiplayer games. And the economies, particularly on Blizzard's Battle.net for Diablo 2, which is probably the closest resemblance, and actually suffers from many of the same problems. And I think it's really just up to the individual communities to police themselves, because everyone plays the game on their own terms. So if you belong to a legit community, where you frown on on anyone who doesn't earn what they're getting, if those are the rules of the community, sure. I mean, not allowing it is fine. But for some people, if you're working 60 hours a week or 90 hours a week, and you're on contract and you only play 2 hours a week, you're never going to have the time to get the Uber items, and it's just not worthwhile for someone like that to play EverQuest and try to get all these items that take 300 million hours to obtain
at the same Aqua Goblin camp.
Exactly.
See a lot of scenery there.
And I think as long as you respect that other people play with a different style, I think that's really and if it really bothers you, just avoid those players, and that's all you can really do.
Okay, anyone else want to? Yeah, go ahead, here in the front.
Well, I think that if you have an item in the game and you want to sell it for money, you can sell it for money. I mean, it's not really solely the property of them. It's not that you own the property. You own the item. You spent the time to get it. So it's sort of like a service you're selling the person. I'll camp this guy for 12 hours for this guy or whatever for X amount of money. If you want to play the game where you're not paying other people to do stuff for you, that's fine. We already pay the people who make the game to play the game. They sit there and the guides sometimes help us, and we pay them. Well, they get paid some amount of money. And
the advice of counsel, I decline to answer.
it's really up to the person who does it. I mean, people do it. Some people do it as a job, and that's all they do. I know one guy on the game. He has nine accounts, and that's all he does. He does nothing but the game. And that's cool. The guy's a great guy, and he has lots of really cool stuff and makes lots of money. But it's not something you can frown upon or not frown upon. It's just something like
it's going to be there.
It's going to be there. It's no bad thing. It's no good thing. I mean,
okay. Oh, go ahead one more, and then I want to ask a few questions to the panel.
I think the models people seem to be using is EverQuest, which I think is very valid in EverQuest, because what you can do doesn't impact other people as much. I mean, so what if you have great armor? You're still getting killed by if someone else has great armor and you don't, you're still getting killed by that same mob. It doesn't really matter. But you move on to what's player versus player is a very important trend in modern games. I think then it becomes a critical issue of why should you just go out in Dark Age of Camelot, let's say, and get ganked by some guy who can afford to buy an account online for a 50th level character. Or with upcoming Star Wars Galaxies, I mean, the thing that I think a lot of people are dreading is the only people who get to be Jedis are the people who bought their accounts. And from at least a business perspective, I understand, even if you don't agree with it, it does impact that company's business, which it may indirectly impact the quality of the game that they can produce for you. That would be my retort to that. When you start mixing player versus player into it, I think it does change things quite a bit.
Right. Okay. If we could just pause for just a moment, Ilanka, is this an issue that's been discussed on the industry side?
Oh, extensively.
Really? Okay. When you do meet and talk about those kinds of things, what's the general tone? What are some of the things that are discussed?
Oh, we have as many opinions on the industry side as we do in this room right now. There are many people who are just adamantly against the idea completely. It turns their stomach. They wouldn't do it personally, and they can't stand that anybody in their games would do it. There's others who look at it from a strictly business side point of view, saying, what the customers want is the product that we need to offer. And if the customers want to be buying and selling things offline, then, more power to them. The customer rules. There's at least one game out there that's actually making a business model off of selling things. It's actually offering things for sale on their own website. The name of it escapes me. Anyone remember?
Project
Entropia. Entropia. I have not seen any numbers as for how viable a business model that is, whether or not it's the goal is that you want to have a company that makes money. You want that company to be around for a long, long time. You want it to be making more money over the years. So I could discuss things from a business point of view in terms of things like customer acquisition and customer retention. Customers are going to play the game as long as they find it fun. How do you define fun? It has to keep their interest. So if they're allowed to buy and sell items, is it something that's going to make them interested in the game for a longer period of time, or is it going to make them less interested in the game? And I think looking at humans, you will find them on both sides of that line. There are people who, if they can't get new stuff fairly rapidly, you know, with a minimum amount of effort, they're going to lose interest and they're going to go on to play something else. And there's others that their goal is that they want to work for it, like the guy in the back. And it's a very valid opinion. You know, you want to earn it. You want to know that whatever you have, you got by the sweat of your brow. So I don't think there's any one model that's going to satisfy everyone. We just need to have multiple kinds. There's so much going on. There are people that are making their living off of this. There was one that was written up in the New York Times. I think he's grossed over $1 million in the time that he's been doing this.
Pretty nice job.
There was a company that was exchanging items in many, many different games, and they're currently involved in litigation with various companies. For a while, they were claiming that they were making $60,000 a month, you know, through all the exchanges that they were doing on different games, and then one of the companies said, "We don't want you doing this anymore." So the exchange company filed a lawsuit claiming restraint of trade. And the game company said, "I don't want you doing that anymore," then filed a countersuit against the exchange company. And this is all going to be chewed out in the courts. And I think it's going to be some very, very interesting stuff to follow.
Was that the Mythic Entertainment? Was that the Dark Age of Camelot?
I didn't want to name any names, but yeah.
Oh, I didn't know. I was just okay. I think that's an interesting point that you made, that there are a variety of opinions on the industry side as well, where I wasn't aware that there was. I was basically the opinion, judging by the things that I've read online, that all of the people in the companies were of one opinion. But that's an interesting...
If I could butt in for a moment.
Sure.
Specifically to address the PvP issue, too, Marine59 is highly focused on PvP, and no one sells items in the game. People will occasionally sell accounts. Our general opinion is that, caveat emptor, there's just too much support on the back end for us to support the actual transaction of an account to another person. When you go to a store and buy a pencil, it's pretty easy. You give them money, you get a pencil. Now, you know, all of a sudden, in our case, now two people are supposedly having a transaction. What if one person's lying about it? Sure.
Hello. From the EverQuest side, it's always very interesting as a guide when one of the things that we'll have people petition about is, I've literally had people say, petition, I bought this account from so-and-so, and now they've changed their password on me.
Fix it for
me. First off...
Didn't see that one coming.
It's not one of the smarter things to petition. It's kind of like telling a cop somebody stole my weed, but... they do it. And generally speaking, you don't really necessarily get kicked out of the game, but let's just say that it's not a good thing to have noted. And of course, there's nothing that either the guides and even the Sony customer service GM reps can do in that situation, because ultimately the account is actually tied to the person who originally did it, and that becomes a major issue. Even with items, it becomes an issue, because people will claim that I bought this item and they were going to camp their person and wake the next one up, and you know, their alt up, and of course the alt never actually wakes up. And certainly it's a major issue, and as you said, it really is very much buyer beware.
I'd
just like to add in here, and what you're talking about on Project Entropia, I did an interview with Patrick Sundstrom, who is the marketing manager for the Project Entropia folks, MindArk folks, and apparently not only is their economy going to be in-game, but they're actually taking it to another level where they're extending it outside of the game. For example, if you have money, in-game money that you have earned as actual coin within their world, you can trade it in for real, actual, your bank account. In other words, real funds, depending on whatever your individual currency is. So
they'll pay you to play the game?
They'll essentially, if you earn money within the game, they will pay out an equivalent amount. It's going to be very interesting to see if that continues to exist.
That actually could balance the game, though, if you think about it.
Something else I'd like to weigh in, though, on, not to get too far off topic, is the selling of accounts, how does that affect the experience for other players around who have put in the hours? For example, you're getting a 50th level character who is essentially learning at a level one pace of how to play their part. So if you're grouping, for example, in Dark Age of Camelot, if you know, you're 50th level, but you're grouping with someone who's literally learning the controls of the game and getting to know Albion or Hibernia or Midgard or whichever realm.
Everyone dies.
Yeah.
Is what happens,
I mean,
yeah.
You know, is that fair to the other players?
No, let's go ahead and...
I play EverQuest on a PvP server, which I find it very fun because the ability to be able to kill people and get their money and them whine about it is kind of funny. But the discussion about how tweaking characters is kind of a fact that it's a PvP server. There's only certain ones that you can go to. And there's what we call Bluebee servers, which are servers that you cannot be get killed on. And if you decide that, I mean, it's a diverse game where you can go to get killed or not get killed or whatnot. But if you earn the money, if you get a character high enough to get the item, I don't see a problem with giving it to your character. It is your character, I mean.
Right.
So, and like EverQuest, they've put new quests in to make it where you get armor and you do get a weapon and whatnot. And I think that, I mean, it's making it where you learn more about how to get armor and money. And you don't get really get to be PvP until level 6, so.
Right.
I mean, you have time to learn about the game.
One good thing about the PvP servers in EverQuest, they pretty much self-regulate. Basically, when you've got somebody who, you know, level 50 who shows up and all of a sudden doesn't really even know the difference between Antonica and Otis, and doesn't know how to get anywhere, generally speaking, that person's going to die and die often. By anybody who gets close to them. And that's one very nice thing about the PvP servers.
Can we hit another?
We have a name for people that are inexperienced that buy high-level characters from Meridian 59. We call them free beer.
Well, I mean, I have a perspective, Dad. I'm an EverQuest player on Dreenel. I don't know if there are any other people from Dreenel out here. We're interested in talking to you, perhaps, afterwards. Like, I mean, you know, take, for example, you know, you've got your primary account. You know, you want to have a convenient means of transportation around. You're sick and tired of asking these druids, you know, paying 10 plat for gate to Grimling. I mean, I don't see necessarily what the issue is of you going out and, say, spending, you know, $1,000 or, you know, $500 to buy some level 50 gate bot. I mean, it saves you time in-game. Like someone said earlier, if you're working like an 80-hour-a-week job, I don't see what the issue is with me like not having to put the time in. So just I can use this guy to gate around, maybe put some damage shields up. I'm not going to play him as a main character. And it saves me time, and I think it's a very valuable resource.
Right.
You know, I've known people to do it. It's pretty, you know.
Yeah. Now, my only beef with people who buy characters, and this happened not long ago on Druzzle Row, is I had a guy I hadn't seen in about 6 months, and sent him a tell, "Hey, buddy, how you doing? Do I know you?" You know, and find out that my friend had sold his account to some complete stranger, and then for the next half hour, he's sending me tells, "Why does everybody hate me? Why is everybody making rude gestures? Why is everybody treating me like a jerk?" And part of the fun in EverQuest is you build a reputation, especially when you get up toward the high-level game. You know, you have an identity. People know who you are. And if you go away for a little while and you come back and now that character is owned by somebody else, you start running into people who know you and you don't know them. It gets really awkward, and you start wondering, you start thinking more about the person behind the keyboard instead of the character that you're supposed to be interacting with, and it takes all the fun out of the game. You know, when your friends, you know, find out your friend has eBayed his account, and now you're playing with a bunch of strangers where they used to be your friends.
So you lucked out and found out before everything went down. I've heard stories about where people will join up with these high-level characters, knowing who the characters are, and they're like, "Oh yeah, I'll join your group," and they go out, and it turns out, well, it wasn't really the same person they thought it was, and they really didn't know what to do. They didn't really know what their role was. They hadn't really learned what was going on, and you know, the same thing happened. Everyone dies, and the only spell he's got hotkeyed is the get out of dodge key on the space bar. You know, so whoops, click, and then they disappear. So in a way, you got kind of lucky. Oh, in the back? Go ahead.
Again, back to the anti-selling point. The thing that frightens me most about it now, really, I don't really care, actually, right now. If people sell their accounts, sell your items, knock yourself out, man. Do whatever you need to do. It really doesn't bother me the way it is now, but I do start seeing a change in the trend of it that disturbs me, and that's the industrialization of it. And it frightens me in that I think it will spoil the game, at least for me. And maybe extremism is what ruins everything. And maybe to me, that's what, in this case, really scares me, is that we're on the cusp of what seems to become that there's going to be huge companies doing this all the time. You're not only going to be dealing with people who buy these items all the time, but you're going to be competing with these people for these drops who are now there and will do anything it takes to cut you out to get this dropped item because
money,
you're getting money for it.
Right.
And I don't want to be, I don't want to personally experience a game like that. You know, the public at large will make their decision and they'll vote with their checkbook, obviously. But that's really the kernel of what disturbs me about the trend, is that industrialization.
Well, a lot of people I talk to, of people who've bought certain products, say, take Diablo 2 for a small example. People go on eBay, buy a $125 Windforce, go in and find out that it was duped, it was a counterfeit copy. They lose it when the game got upgraded. How do y'all feel about that? I mean, I feel that that's just a small product of what's to come, especially when he's talking about industrialization and the counterfeits of products going to be more and more. Just like if you go to Diablo2.net and see the trades, most of those trades and a lot of them for the high level stuff are duped items. And most of them, when this new patch or what have comes out, will be taken away from those players. So.
Where's the mic?
Account that you can, that you can say, hey, this person's duping, I'm going to delete their account, and therefore they, they've got to start from scratch. Well, in Diablo, all you have to do is go and, put the item on on another account, and you'll never be able to trace it. So it's become a very large issue for us as a community, because it's impossible to track where a source, for a particular item came from. So all of us are very wary when we're trading for items, or dealing with anyone that's that's coming into the community and bringing those items into the community, because you just don't know where these things are coming from anymore.
Well, I guess my biggest question to y'all as an audience is, how do you fight against that? Say, since we've got so many MMORPGs coming out nowadays, that it's just going to grow and it's going to grow. You're going to have, everything's going to be counterfeit, whether you're doing it legally, whether you're just trading, 25 pennies for a small little gem for your sword. How are you going to stop that? How do you, as a community, think that can be handled?
In the back there?
The best way to do that would be to take the value of the item away. No drops. Signatures to the item for the original owner. So there's a decay rate once it leaves the original owner. That would be the fastest way. The second you take away the value of the item, going to take away the industry that's going behind it. When things no longer hold a worth anymore and people are not willing to pay $190 for something that's going to rot in 5 days, that's when you get away from it. But as far as accounts trade, the only day that I'll go with accounts trade is the day they start posting who traded or who sold. Because as a player, I go out there and I go with people that have talent and skill to play the game and have been playing with this game since the day it started. I'm not, as a player, when I have to lose 8 hours of my personal time for what other deaths I took because some 14-year-old bought an account because his daddy has more credit card room than I do. Mm-hmm. It's not going to happen.
Right. Definitely things to think
about.
So,
until the companies get to a point where they will post who sells, none of us are going to agree with it.
Right.
We are recording this, so please wait for the microphone.
As far as the account trading, I know I've died a few times by some noobs getting level 48, 47 character, but fortunately, when you start to ask who's the MA or whatever else in DAOC, you can pretty much figure out who is or who isn't. But as far as gold and everything in there. I don't know, that's going to be harder to track. I think in the AOC, I know it's going to become a lot more important as more as the housing comes out. I think guilds could easily fold because of that. So I've heard
My understanding that's happening with the expansion Shrouded Isles.
Right. I heard that the going rate is $30 per platinum, but as a newly popular class, I've also been harassed a lot about trading my character out or people purchasing it. And I've kind of invested all that time creating a persona and assisting my guild. It's just kind of annoying for all these people to be spamming.
How often does that happen?
What's that?
How often does that happen? How often are you?
Since a newly found tactic, it's been I've got about 4 to 5 requests.
Right. Yeah.
They want my character. Cabalist. The pygmy golems.
Spam you. Yeah.
They even went on cabalist.org to put on there they want to count it. This one guy said at any cost. So.
If I could add another question here, are you aware of any exchange rates that are going on in any of the games that that Simutronics does? Are there known exchange rates for currency?
Oh yeah, we regularly track the exchange rate because if the exchange rate is changing rapidly, we know there's probably a bug in the game that somebody's abusing, and so we need to go out and take a look at it. I think in Dragon Realms, it's 2 plats to the dollar, and or it's changed a little bit. I think they're currently saying that 1 plat is about equivalent to $1 Canadian. and Gemstone, I think it's 1 million silvers for like $35 is the last thing. In terms of the offline sales in each of our games, and our games have been around for a while. The Gemstone's been around for over 12 years, so we have a mature gaming environment. We estimate that in Gemstone alone, there's probably offline sales going on of about $50,000 a month, with about 10 to 20% of that being fraud, meaning, you know, someone spent, you know, $200 for a sword, and then the sword wasn't as advertised, and so they send us the canceled check and say, somebody cheated me, you know, take care of it, and we're like, hey, you know, you know, we're not involved in that. But it's situations like those that do make us occasionally consider, should we be the ones offering it for sale? Not because we think it's a good idea to offer things for sale, but just to protect people from fraudulent trades. And the answer comes back, no, we still don't want to get involved in sale. You know, there's all sorts of downsides to it if we got involved in sales. Number one, we're going to antagonize a large number of our customer base. Number two, there's that interest factor. The game, we feel, would not be as interesting if you could just plunk down money and buy anything you want in the game. So if currently an average customer is playing the game for an average of 18 months, we think that if we were to implement sales, that number would probably shrink, you know, 16 months, 14 months, 12 months. It's a bad business decision, for which I'm happy. My gut says, good, I'm glad it's a bad business decision because I don't want to do it. But we still have to look at the numbers. And, you know, some people, they love trading things. They'll trade characters the way other people will trade magic cards. You know, you'll have a bunch of people on the street saying, hey, I'll give you my level 6 ranger for your, you know, level 8 wizard. And they trade the characters back and forth, and each day they're playing a different character, and they're fine on it. It doesn't bother them. It doesn't bother anybody else in the game. But then you get some level 75 wizard who's been playing the game for, you know, 5 years, and they go on eBay and they sell it, and, you know, their friends get upset, other people in the game get upset, people who are dying because they can't get in their enchants get upset. And so that's where I draw the line, is where it's being disruptive to the game environment. Then it's no longer one person or a group of people doing it. They're doing something that is now negatively impacting the enjoyment of the game for other customers. And that's wrong, in my opinion.
Okay. Take a couple more questions on this particular topic that I wanted to move on, but go ahead.
One of the things I've noticed about much of upcoming games is they're worried about the endgame economy. I work for Stratix, and I've noticed most of the new games on our site that are coming out are very worried about the endgame economy. And last time I was in EverQuest, it was okay, but I saw it was going down. Last time I was on UO, I was really disgusted about the endgame economy, and this is from people selling things online and stuff. So a lot of these new upcoming games, what would your advice be for them? Because if the eBay stuff is going to ruin their economy, and that's one of the main aspects some of these people are building their whole game around, like, for instance, Atriarch is building a lot of their stuff on the economy among players, and Star Wars Galaxies itself, a lot of the experience is based on the economy. Your character experience is based on economy in a way.
So,
Oh, I thought you were addressing the question.
In my experience, many games do not pay the attention economy that they should. They throw out the game. They have the magic worked out. They got combat worked out to a T, and economy is like, oh, yeah, we'll have golds and silvers. But they don't actually think that there's going to be stuff going in the economy, and they have to have ways to get the money out of the economy. So I think that game designers should spend more time working on the economy, and I think that they should factor in that there's going to be a certain percentage of offline sales that are going to occur. Not everyone's going to do it, but it's not something that a game designer can avoid. And to try and say that you have a game where you just won't allow sales, I think is not realistic. It's going to happen. That you just have to factor it in a certain percentage.
I could interrupt or add my two cents, I guess. To bore people with a little history, one of the first online graphical chats was known as Habitat. They had a very simple economy where you had coins. Unfortunately, there was an exploit that was coded in the system where you could buy something cheap one place and sell it for more somewhere else. So people would just keep on, moving things back and forth. One of the lessons learned, and it was a terribly simple economy. I mean, it was nowhere near as complex as an EverQuest or UO's economy. And basically, the lesson you can learn here is there's always going to be something to screw up your economy. So I'm going to kind of take the opposite tack of Alonka here and say, really, you just got to kind of play it by ear. You can plan, but, the original developers of Habitat didn't plan to have a money bug. And so what happened was, to kind of further this example, what happened was you could basically take off your head of your avatar and trade it with other people. And so people actually used heads as currency when money became devalued. Yeah, it sounds a little odd, doesn't it? But, how do you stop that then? All of a sudden, something that's supposed to be purely cosmetic suddenly has value in the game. People are going to buy and sell these offline. How are you going to stop that? You can't. You just simply can't. So.
Yeah. Okay. Wanted to get just two more. I know you've been waiting for
this one.
Okay.
First of all, to the thing you asked to the audience about the fraudulent thing. Just you're going to have to stamp like, hey, sell at your own risk, or we frown upon selling, and if you do. It's up to you. You got to handle it with the other person. We are not, going to police that and all that stuff. And as far as the regarding the, he says something about the making the item not as valuable. Well, they do that in Diablo 2. Stuff degrades. You have to repair it. I think Galaxies is planning on doing something similar to the same. It's not going to matter. Diablo 2 was, I didn't play it before all this started happening. Probably right about the time it started happening, and people were selling stuff like crazy. I don't care how worthless it was. If it was a really good item, it could be like one point away from being destroyed or whatever. Somebody could still make $300 or $400 off of it. And as far as the guy in the red talking about camps, like contested camps or something like that, if an item's worth like $500 on eBay or player auctions or wherever you're going, and somebody does whatever they can to get to the item before anybody else, as a guide, I know you've run into this problem probably before. If you're legitimate, they have actual rules for taking a camp. Like, if you come up and you're already engaging the monster or whatever, because this happens on the Seventh Hammer multiple times by a certain guild, the guild will come in and start attacking the guy also. And if the other guild gets wiped because they have all the aggro or the guy attacking them, then the guy's already basically killed almost. And the other guild just comes in, does 5 points of damage, kills the guy, takes the super loot, and walks away with it. But they have ways that the guides, the GMs, will give the items back to the people who were doing it, and they have certain rules. That's all you have to do is to keep the camps contested or uncontested or whatever the wording for that is. You just have certain rules for it and penalize the people who broke the rules.
I want to take one more before we move on to... Then we can come back when we have some more time.
I think a lot of what you're mentioning really is just an excuse, because everything that you've said, the sale of accounts and the sale of items, can have an in-game equivalent. You can buy loot rights for no-drop equipment, which completely eliminates that attempt at saving things. You can power level a character to 60th level and not know a thing about how that character, that class is played. You can play a cleric that's power leveling a monk that has no idea how to pull a certain level. And I just don't see the difference between those two situations.
There's definitely some things to think about. Oh, go ahead.
One thing I wanted to address on that brought up a point of something I ran across the other week on the web. if people on EverQuest may be familiar with a wizard's ability called Mana Burn, one of their, I see a fan out here. Mana Burn is kind of not too well understood, but one of its abilities are, if you get really lucky, you can do like 15,000 or more damage in one single shot, which is pretty considerable. There's a website that I ran across where people are selling the willingness on a particular server to get a chain of wizards to mana burn anything for you. Well, that's one of them. And that is a little bit different than what we're talking about, because you're buying a service to get an item as opposed to buying the item directly. A lot of people are very upset about it, even within the guide program, and it was pointed out, well, that probably won't work as well as it sounds on paper, but it does bring up a point. You can buy that service of power leveling, and is that really any different than buying the item itself?
Sure.
And when we play, she power levels me, or if I need her to stay back or whatever, just level me, or vice versa. There's nothing against that. It's the same thing as him saying making excuses. We're not making excuses. We can play the game however you choose to play the game. If you break an actual law or a rule that the game has and that's bannable by the certain people who make the game, then yeah, then you're doing something completely wrong. And if you're hired, like you said, like buying a service, they can't really do anything about that, because I cannot pay somebody to cut my grass, and if, you know, it's against the EULA or whatever, then I guess I'm breaking the law.
Well, it's kind of like, in my opinion, when you have somebody who just bought a game, for say, they don't have the strength to use an item that they just bought. I mean, it's kind of like a certain security measure that probably in the back of their mind they're using. You know, it takes a strength of 35, and your character has 12. And they just paid $250 for it. You know, unless you go and buy a character that can use it, that weapon's utterly useless to you. You've just spent money that could have used somewhere else. Yeah. It's the small security.
Well, I wanted to move on. Does anyone else on the panel have any?
One thing I'm waiting to make the news, and if it's happened yet, I haven't noticed this. I know sometimes there's people that play chess tournaments online, and they get point systems, and that they get rating systems, and you get up to the point of where you're being a grandmaster. And I'm just waiting until I read in the newspaper somewhere that someone had a grandmaster rating, which only allowed them, you know, to play in certain tournaments, and that they sold this, you know, on eBay, so that some newbie chess player can go in on this grandmaster thing and go up against other grandmasters. Of course, they're just going to get creamed. Yeah, right. Yeah. But I'm sure that there would be some economic value for it. I'm just surprised it hasn't happened yet.
Yeah, it's a good point. All right, moving on to something else. How many people in here are in guilds? How many people have organized? All right, yeah, it's definitely grown over the years. I remember myself in Ultima Online in the early days. The thing that seemed to be the strongest catalyst to really bring people together was the unregulated PvP. Other people formed guilds for economic reasons, other people for making magic items, you know, so on and so forth. What are the reasons? Did people join a guild for the social aspects? Or go ahead.
Fun.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Fun with people that we enjoy being with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, not knowing what's around that next corner.
Your epic without a large group.
Without being able to group. So it was basically part of the game design in a way.
People helping you with a number of items.
Right. Now, in the in some of the games that have been around for a little while, when did you notice the tendency for people to group up like this began? Is it pretty much always?
The first day I played.
First day
yeah. Yeah. There are certain things that are human nature, and one is that we form groups, we look for friends, and another is that we want to find ways of gaining status, whether it be with stuff or with items or with money or levels or titles. And there's going to be trading. The people are going to find out what there is of value, and they're going to figure out ways of trading it. Gemstone 2, I remember the economy was very poorly balanced there, and silvers were worth nothing. You know, so if someone killed a monster and there'd be some coins and there'd be some potions, they wouldn't even bother picking up the coins. They were worthless. They were like gravel, but they'd pick up the potions, right. And that's what people then traded. I'll give you 2 green potions if you enchant a sword for me. So people, I think it's just in human nature, we figure out what the unit of currency is, whether it be money or potions or titles or heads or whatever it may be.
Also, when you begin a game, and you have a friend who's been playing it for 2 years, and he has a small group that he hangs around with,
exactly.
And you join a small guild, and that's where you get that aspect from, and you start joining and playing with them, right. And it becomes a small community.
Yeah. Or a large one.
Or a large one,
eventually, yeah.
I found also that guilds are sometimes formed to create content that doesn't exist inherently in the game. For example, for those of you who play Dark Age of Camelot know that there are role-playing servers. There are guilds who are actually formed and for whom their primary focus is to have monthly or weekly events within their guilds to actually create in-game role-playing content that isn't technically present in the game in terms of mobs or monsters or the economy in there, but on the fly, they're adding to the value of the game for those players in their guild.
Comment?
Even though we take 10 people here, we're all friends, those 10 people are going to have different mindsets and different play styles. And they're going to have different goals towards the end game. A friendship guild is a great thing to have as a side thing, but you're going to always have power gamers in anything. You take 5 of these people, move them off, you're going to have 2 or 3 power gamers in that group. You have 2 or 3 people that are just happy playing a game at their own pace. That causes major rifts in the end game with friendship guilds. Most times with guilds, and I know on mine on ECI, it was a gathering of people of like mind, like abilities, like playtime. And
right.
That's what created the guild. You know, your friendship guilds were great until you're like 30 or 40th level, but after that point when it became a necessity to have 15 to 30 people around you at all times to accomplish any goal, you had to move away from that friendship guild.
Right.
Because you're getting into a larger and larger group of people with that.
My guild has been around on EverQuest for over 3 years. It existed in Ultima Online prior to that and started in beta. And you can find a good balance between your power gamers. I am the slowest leveler in my guild. I am level 54 on my cleric after 3.5 years of gaming. It's just the way I play the game, but I can find a balance, and we have a stable core. But it may not be the norm, but I don't. It's not that it's not going to exist and isn't capable of functioning.
Actually, in this discussion here, we're actually seeing kind of an interesting dichotomy. If I could jump in on this particular point, there's a site out on the net, and I cannot remember the URL to save my life right now. I'm very sorry, but there's a guy for whom this is essentially his doctoral research project. Thank you. Yeah, and analyzes some of the motivations of players of massively multiplayer online RPGs, and one of the points in his analysis was the different ways men and women play, and yeah, I'm grinding my own axe here because I am womengamers.com, but but the point being, one of the things that he found in his research and in his statistics, and I'm not affiliated with the site in any way, was that female players tended more often toward the social aspect, and particularly to found guilds or be officers in guilds, because of that connection and that bringing people together, whereas the male players tend to more often to be more goal-oriented as far as a quest they were doing, an epic level event, and that sort of thing. So just kind of, there appear to be some different motivations among players and how they reach their goals.
About having friendship guilds, I'm in a fairly small guild. Most of the high-level events that I've gone through have not been with my guild because I'm presently the only... I have the 2 highest-level characters in my guild, a 58 and a 60, and the next highest level is a 55, so it's very difficult for me...
What are you doing here? Why aren't you home leveling?
Just taking a break.
Had to quit for a while. Any major thing I want to do, I now have to, you know, join another guild's raid or get other high-level people that I know or talk to or worked with before to help me with that. I can't really do much more with my guild except wait for them to get up to my level.
Plus, I guess that's with a lot of games, too. I mean, you got to think about it. A lot of us work 40 hours a week, 60 hours a week, and some just go to school for a couple hours a day. And they sit there, and, you know, they're leveling while you're at work, and when you come on and play on the weekends, they've reached level 25, and you just started that week, and you're still level 2. I mean, they're over there killing things that you have no chance against, and they slowly move away from that, so I do see a point there. But then again, I see a lot of guilds that stay together, whether there's, I see level 60s and level 2s still running around that's been running around together from various online games for years.
Which guild? Okay.
I don't play UO, and I don't know anything about it. I play AC, and I've played DAOC for ages. And the only successful guilds I've ever seen that really work are friendship guilds. I mean, my guild is an Uber guild. We are the Uber guild, and we are big, but we're all friends. We're family. No one in our guild would ever eBay without de-guilding and telling. I mean, yeah.
I go back to Mobile today and a new game comes out tomorrow. 15 of my friends, we all get onto it. Out of that 15 people, generally 5 people are going to have a different mindset than the other 10. And what that's going to cause is not only a rift in the real life friendships that go on, but a rift in the gameplay sometimes. And it has happened, trust me, it really has on more than one occasion now with DAOC and with EQ, because of some people getting items that other people wanted and everything like that. And it does cause problems because the items are king. That's nobody will ever dispute that. But in the higher level guilds, I'm from ECI, our last hope on ECI. Very good sized guild, very, very friendly. Everybody's extremely good, but a lot of people are like-minded players and like play styles. I'm not talking friendship guild as in having an Uber guild that nobody knows each other. I'm talking more of a friendship guild than a bunch of your local friends getting together, forming a guild, and trying to go through the game together.
Right.
I'd just like to clarify that.
That the friendships tend to form after the guilds kind of get together, and then they... Right.
Definitely.
I gotta say, Alonka's really good. They picked up that site, the Narathian Scrolls, and that's the research site. It's got a lot of good information on it. I highly recommend it if anybody here plays these games, and it seems that a few of you in the room do, so I'm a hacker. That's what I do.
There's a gamer too.
One of the great things about some of the guilds I have seen have formed before games have started, and they keep going. Okay. Like, I'm in Moss Stratix, and we're planning on keeping going within Star Wars Galaxies. And also another friendship guild, which has gone on other things now in game, is on EverQuest, was YKZ. They were very powerful when they were a group of 10 people that were all good friends together, and some of those 10 people have stayed together and still travel across country to meet each other. I've actually, one of my friends is in it, and he's had friends come down from like the middle Midwest. And it's one of the great things about friendship guilds is such bonds like that that'll accomplish between real people in game.
Definitely. I mean, look at the fairs that they have. Look at the EQ fairs. Look at the DOAC stuff that they're starting to come out with.
Yeah.
Look at the things for Assurance Call 2, the Assurance 2, that beta that's coming out this week. I mean, it's big. You're having people just meeting for that so they can move their guild on.
I was recently at the EverQuest fanfare in Boston, and there was a guild that had at least 50 people show up from all around the country. This was an Uber guild. They weren't on any server I was familiar with, but this was an Uber guild on that server who definitely they weren't friends originally, but I don't think you would have that many people flying in from all over the country, and in fact world in their case, if they hadn't become friends sometime during that their reign on that server.
Yeah, on that note, the Lost Order of Akalabeth, the guild that I've been in since 97, we've got T-shirts going on. We just had our Atlanta gathering here last past June. We have a Pennsylvania gathering coming up this month, and we got about 150 people in the guild. It fluctuates between 150 and 170, somewhere in there over the years it has. And we've been in just about every major game, and I'll tell you what, guys, you meet a lot of really good people. You know, when you get in the guild and you really stick with it, you really do become pretty close friends. I've met a lot of good people doing that. So, I'll go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, to clarify the difference between a quote-unquote friendship guild and an Uber guild, I play on Drizzle Row, and I was in Rutabaga Paradox from level 1 to level 50-something. And, you know, my girlfriend, my real-life best friend, you know, people that I know here locally were in that guild, and I've played with them for forever. But if I wanted to see in-game content, if I wanted to wake the sleeper, if I wanted to go to Vexthal, if I wanted to do the real in-game stuff, I had to join Haas. You know, I had to leave my real life friends and go meet some people in game that want to do the same things I wanted to do. They are mutually exclusive. You pick a band of 10 buddies, if you can stay together from 1 to 60 and get to the in game content, you'll do something nobody else has ever done. It hadn't happened on any server that I'm familiar with. There are people that know each other in a gaming sense,
that can get together and form a guild, and then they're the people, you know, your next door neighbor, your girlfriend, your best buddy from work or whatever. Two entirely different concepts.
It's,
there are
it's
EQ friends and real world friends.
Yeah.
Taking that down to a smaller level from guilds, my wife and I started. I started playing EverQuest before my wife did. As y'all know, guides do play EverQuest as well as guide. And she quickly started playing. It only took about 2 days for her to take over the whole idea of playing EverQuest. She had her account very quickly after that. But it's very interesting in that she has a different goal than I do, and it's probably almost it's a very different sort of thing than probably what you've seen on your site, in that she is aiming for, you know, the waking of the sleeper. She wants to be the first one to do everything. I want to hail everybody in the game. Every NPC, I want to see every one of them, and I want to find that one quest that nobody's found yet. As a result, I don't have a level 60. I haven't reached that yet, but I've probably got 10 different characters above level 15 on, and some of them a lot higher, on at least 5 different servers, because I'm exploring and looking around. But it's two totally different ways of playing the game. There is no way she and I could be in the same guild.
Yeah, I just wanted to add exactly what you were saying to your point. All it comes down to ultimately in the end is, you know, why do you play this game? You play this game to have fun. Well, what makes it fun? You know, do you want to wake the sleeper? Do you want to do that? You know, you want to group yourself with people then that can get this accomplished. I mean, I know people that log in and have been like level 20 forever, and they just log in, you know, so they can chat with people that they've met online. You know, they use it as a chat form. You know, they don't necessarily play the game other than, you know, for the people aspect of it. And I mean, I think that's ultimately what a guild is. I mean, it's a group of like-minded people that get together to accomplish some goal, be it, you know, form a family online that you can talk to, help each other out, you know, friends with socially, or, you know, go kill the emperor and, you know, break your way into Vexthal. You know, it's just a matter of, you know, motivations, and I think like people tend to congregate, you know? Yeah, otherwise, if you don't like the situation you're in, you're going to move somewhere, where, you know, where you can be happy.
There's a server on Valenzik. It's called Dark Defiant Warriors. And basically, before you join, you know that once you get to a certain level, you must go on to another guild, which is called Torrent. Once you reach Torrent and you get level 60, and either you get level 60 and you have your epic, you can go on to another guild, which is called Adventus, which most people don't do that just because of friend-wise, because they know people from Dark Defiant Warriors. So those three guilds, supposed to be an alliance, are now breaking up into different parts.
Really?
And so some people might have just one or two epics in Torrent that didn't want to go to Adventus, and some people, well, most of all the people I know in Dark Defiant Warrior do have epics, and so they just don't want to change because of their friends, and they've known everybody in there, and they know everybody, you know, in the guild, friendship-wise.
Right. So that affects their decision. Yeah.
I'd like to ask a hard question, if I may. Why do you think that the guilds, especially the higher-end guilds, are at the same time the, say, Sony's greatest test subjects, and at the same time their greatest beating post? I mean, I play on Nameless, and especially the high-end guilds like the Legacy of Steel, they recently had a run-in with one of their GMs, which pretty much stopped them 1% from killing Aten in Vexile, and the GM said that they were using some kind of Z exploit, which is well documented all over, that it's the exact same thing that they're using to pull the Dane, and have been for the last 18 months. But they stopped them from killing it, they kicked everyone out, and they suspended the officers. Now, this was eventually solved, and an apology was rendered on both sides, but this is constantly happening. And as EverQuest becomes larger and larger, and they put more high-end content in it, the guilds are going to be the ones that really test the area. They're going to find all the flaws, they're going to report it, but nothing's really been done about it. The Temple of Vishen pathing is just awful.
In mind, every developer has their own way of testing their products and how they handle patches and how they handle everything else. As of Sony, you got to think that company, Invariant, doing about 4 other games also. So the exploits that they find, they can only do so much for. and especially on the testing side, yeah, the guilds are going to be your major testers, but it's how much time you have to put into that patching process and how many bugs you find
but
in
how,
that game.
How hard is it to work with the guilds that have found these exploits instead of just jumping on them with both feet as these things come up?
Well,
I mean, I'm sure that these things have been documented or at least talked about online to the point where people know about them, and then for all of a sudden for them to come down on the guild, ban the officers, and screw up their fun is silly, when they could be saying, how did you do this? We want to know. And once you told that side of the story, we'll say, this is what we consider an exploit. This is what we need to do to work it out. We're going to try to fix it on our end. Please don't do this again. But most of the GMs that I've seen in these situations just completely disregard the tact situation of it, and they just want to stop it by the most forceful means necessary. That would be nice.
That's a whole other panel.
That's true, yeah.
I'd like to address that one for a second. Definitely, I'm not even remotely familiar with the situation, and I have learned one thing as a guide. There's always two sides to every story. I would suspect that there's a little more than what the guild is saying, and what most people aren't aware of is Sony never states anything as to their side of the story. It's just not good practice to start doing that. Having said that, there have been times an exploit is basically where you're doing something and you can't possibly get hurt, and you're gaining experience or you're gaining loot and there's no way you can get hurt. It's usually pretty obvious that you're doing an exploit or not. I found myself doing one as a player, and you know, I didn't stop that very second, but as soon as I was done killing it, I left. But it does happen. I'm also a software developer, and I'll tell you that just because you know a bug is out there doesn't mean you can fix it anytime soon. Sometimes these things take a while. Even if it's unless it is just a massive problem, and as those of you who've been with EverQuest for a while know, right after they release major patches, or not patches, but major releases like Luklan, Velius, Kunark before that, generally speaking, they're going to find one monstrous bug somewhere, and they have to bring that server right back down. I'm not going to try to tell you that they're doing it the best way on Earth, but bugs aren't always as easy to fix as possible. And it is generally the player's responsibility to realize that if you know that you're doing something, there's no way you can get hurt, you know you're probably not doing something right. And also, I'd almost have to ask from a player standpoint, are you really having fun if there's no challenge in the game? Basically, what he's saying is that just getting into Vexthal is a challenge unto itself. And I do agree with that, but it's still a question of if you get in a position where you can stand in a particular corner and nuke something all day long. As I happen to basically have caught somebody the other day who was standing on the other side of a wall in the nether regions of between walls. They couldn't possibly get hurt, and they were nuking things that couldn't shoot spells back. That's an exploit. There's no other way around it, and I just refuse to believe that they were unaware that this was a bad thing. I'm sorry. I couldn't possibly see any other way than realizing that one is an exploit. But again, it's so situational that it's hard to even address at that point. I do agree it would be nice if they could maybe cooperate a little bit with the guilds. The problem is, even within a guild, you have some people who are definitely going to choose to do exploits, and other people who honestly, and I've had people do this petition and say, hey, I may be doing an exploit, could you please come take a look? And I'll come, and it's very much appreciated, and it does help.
I was going to get back to the small family types of guilds. One thing that the guild that I'm in is fairly small, but we do things with other guilds on a regular basis. So you can, as a small guild, 30, 40 people, still get to your epic items. You can get, you know, field groups of 6 or 7 groups because you've built up through your 20s and 30s and all that relationships with other guilds. especially on the guild I'm in is across two servers, and on the PvP server, that is vitally important to have friends in other guilds that you can say, hey, this guy just PK'd me. Can you guys do something to run him out of here? So that's something that, you know, we're organizing cross-guild raids and things like that. So that's another way that you can have your small family servers or family guilds and still accomplish the great goals in the game.
One of the things I've actually seen fairly often lately has been kind of the advent of the junior guild, basically a guild of not quite high-end raid capable, but with enough of a force that they can actually add to some guild that does do so. Often in these cases for the Uber guild in question, it's a known factor. These people are people that they know but aren't really quite ready for the guild as per their normal stats. But you know, for a particular raid, if they're short a cleric or two or need some more warriors, whatever else, this other guild is somebody that they can call on to say, hey, can you send some people along? I mean, one of the things I've often seen is that in terms of loot, the junior guild often suffers just, you know, because most guilds think in terms of the main guild first and then go on to others, you know, such as the junior guild secondary. But it is a possibility for some of the people who want to see some of the high-end raiding but don't want a full-time raiding guild. You know, they can pretty much have, you know, their social guild or something just a little bit under that level. Right. I've seen that quite a bit lately.
We've actually done that ourselves in Dark Age of Camelot. And it was funny, the guild that we originally, or that was originally a little bit higher than us, we ended up kind of surpassing them eventually, and you know, it all evened up in the end, but it was really good. It was a really nice experience having the guilds around like that. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was wanted to address the idea of the exploit. I wonder, since when do customers hold their customers responsible for bad programming?
Well, that's a good point. But by the same token, I think when you get my opinion, and this is only my opinion, pretty much everything I'm saying up here is definitely not Sony's opinion.
Be careful, the tomatoes are about to come.
I know, I'm going to duck behind you here in a second. But I absolutely do agree that there are bugs that happen, and quite frankly, that's why guides exist, is to help correct the things where you wake up and you're dead. You know, we've definitely gotten better at being able to help with that. But it's still no question that, in my opinion, you know if you're cheating or you're not. And sometimes...
Yeah, but you can interact the way if you're going to cheat or not. You can always say if this is an exploit.
As a programmer, there's lots of ways for you to interact with my program without my knowledge or consent. There's a lot of ways you can interact. I mean, any program. I mean, you know, you can crash Excel. That doesn't mean, you know, the programmer, you know, intended for you to crash Excel. There's going to be some times when you know, there's just certain quirks.
Who played the UO beta? Who remembers the ultimate bug that they found? Which they killed bug? Lord British.
Oh, yeah.
That's a bug. All right? That's an exploit right there.
Allow me to finish kind of addressing that, though. It seems to me that in a lot of cases, these massive online games, you're almost entering into a contract with both yourselves and everybody else to actually enjoy the game. And that's almost like the bigger issue of exploits and selling items and everything else. Are you actually creating a shared world that everybody can enjoy, or are you basically taking advantage of loopholes in the law? And, you know, yeah, there's going to be loopholes in everything. I don't necessarily think that the wrath of God should come down immediately, but I will say that quite often we'll find the same people finding these bugs over and over, and I refuse to believe that that's doing anything but exploiting bugs in the system. I mean, that is what an exploit is. It's definitely a bug, but you're basically ruining the game experience.
And there's some players who just play to exploit bugs. I mean, truly there are.
We are a bug exploit server.
That's called beta testing, too.
Yeah.
That's what a lot of people do.
Although on EverQuest, the test server is a wonderful place to go exploit bugs without really getting into any trouble. I can tout that one quite well.
We have a question over here.
About the bugs, one I know that's killed me several times is casters. I have a caster, which is a mage, and nuking through walls is one thing that seems to be a problem. In PvP, you can't nuke through walls. PvE, you get nuked through walls like nothing. And that has to be, you know, I mean, if a character or a mob is supposed to be as, say, an NPC non-player character, it should have the same effects of not being able to cast through a wall. I mean, if you're running through a place where there's a lot of walls, and a mob casts on you and it lands on you, like, so say, Root, you die from it. You know, that should be a bug, saying, you know, because you're not supposed to be able to cast through walls. It should say you cannot see your target. I know, because, I mean, I have a bard, and you need to be able to see your target, which is hard. And, I mean, if the mob should have the same aspects as a character should.
Getting back to the bugs, exploits, and problems in the games, there's two famous ones, and the communities have.
Are we talking EverQuest specifically?
Yes, EverQuest.
It's turning into an EverQuest bug session.
This is more of a customer service issue and everything like that. If you have a community who has an outcry, they're saying this thing does not work, but the company won't get back to you, and you have a six-month period before anything is coming. Then they come back after 6 months of you trying this thing over and over again. Two cases in point, the Rager Stone and Hate for almost a six-month period was not on the loot tables. Anybody who's a shaman, can we say alchemy? Jesus. You know, they ruined that for so long, and then they came back and fixed it and said, oh, well, we're sorry. And we were crying for it for months.
Well,
that kind of customer service has to happen. I understand if you find an exploit, but why jump to go fix because I can get a mob from the Z-axis and not do the same jump to go fix a skill that's broken?
Some of these patches require, I mean, full rebuilds of the game engine. I mean, not specifically that error or what have you. Some of them do, and they can only fix it when, say, Valonius or whatever came out. That's the only time they could fix it, because it was a game enhancement. It actually touched the engine. You can't just send out a small patch that affects one thing, because it could ruin other stuff. That's why you have to go through testing like that.
Instead of 6 months worth of silence, you know, and no comment whatsoever from a game company.
Acknowledge that it's there.
Yeah.
I agree with that.
They should at least come out and say, hey, this is our problem. We're looking at getting to it. And that's the one thing I can applaud about Mythic so far, is the fact that they do seem to come up and own up if they're having a problem with something. The customer base knows. So the customer base isn't thinking, well, what am I doing wrong? Well, let me go up and put another 4 hours into this raid to see if I can get this item. Well, no, not tonight. You know, let the player base know. We're adults. We can figure it out. If it doesn't work, why are we going to go waste our time trying to do it?
I agree. There needs to be good communication with the customer base.
Especially on an MMORPG. I mean, that's what needs to happen is communication, because that's what you're doing with the world, and that's what you're doing with the characters you play, is you're going to communicate with them, and that's what needs to be brought up.
The second part of this, too, is, you know, if you don't like the treatment, quit. I mean, if you're playing my game, and I do the same thing, quit.
Yeah, it used to be there was only one or two games,
right.
And so if you didn't like it, you just had to stay with it.
You
now
know,
there's a lot of choices out
if,
there.
If you go to McDonald's, they spit in your hamburger, and you take it back, and they spit in it again, do you get a third hamburger?
Go to Burger King.
Exactly. You know, at some point, you got to say enough is enough. You know, without getting on too much of a rant here, you know, players kind of bring it on themselves by putting up with it. If you don't like it, leave.
It's like the old revolution. I mean, revolt. Revolt against it. Say, we're not going to play it.
Right.
I mean, until you fix this bug, we're pulling our accounts.
And that's one of the great powers of guilds, you know, kind of bring it back to the purpose of the panel. I mean, one customer who gets upset and leaves, that's one customer. But when one customer gets upset and then their entire guild leaves, that's something that a game company knows. I mean, the guilds do have power there.
Sometimes that affects thousands of players when a guild leaves. And so that's going to sell the company, hey, you know, we need to fix this quickly. So, I mean, it's also, like she's saying and like he said, it's the player's choice. The player has an option now. So, you know, exploit that option and that's an exploit right there. Exploit that and let the developers know that you're not going to put up with it.
I think we have time for one more. Yes.
Well, I was going to tie in the whole poorly designed, you know, player's fault versus Varant's fault. And, yes, this is another EQ rant. Getting back to the whole Legacy of Steel incident in Vex'Thal, I've played that zone many times, and I know how poorly it's designed. And they came up with a technique for pulling a mob without having to fight for 4 hours through million hit point mobs that drop absolutely nothing, that are boring, repetitive, and otherwise make the zone unfun. They found a way around it that Varant didn't like,
and Varant went off on him. And I think that's just every bit as wrong as a guy who goes into high pass, stands behind a table where he knows the mob can't reach, and casts with impunity and power levels himself to 40 in about 30 minutes. You got to go with the designers in this one. It's, they designed the game the way it is. They need, if the players find a way around the design, how can you hold them responsible?
But I will say this. Exploits are keep going to it and exploiting it. Now, if you bring it up to their attention, that's fine. But if you keep doing it just to prove that it's there, to me, that's the exploit.
Okay.
You're also dealing with basic player psychology here as far as the polarity between basic human selfishness and fair play, as far as what you know to be equitable and the right way to play the game.
Are you honestly telling me that Varant designing a zone that you have to slog through for hours and hours and hours, that finding a way around that is finding a way around a time sink is somehow contrary to a company like Varant's master design for EverQuest, that they want us to sink time and effort doing boring, repetitive stuff to get to an end and won't let us take shortcuts even when we find them?
This is not meant as a personal attack, but you're paying them to do boring, repetitive stuff.
And, I mean,
not anymore. I've been playing for free for about 8 months, but yeah, good point.
And let me say this: I'm definitely not going to defend every customer service move that taking EverQuest. I'm not going to defend everyone because, quite frankly, guides have messed up, GMs have messed up, and as a company, you know, my personal opinion is that Sony has messed up, but. There's, you know, so I can't defend them all, but I think that there, again, as I said earlier, there's always two sides to every story. Even if you're there, you find out that there's two sides to a story, and I kind of want to just leave with that that keep in mind there's always other issues.
Think about it also too from a developer standpoint. You have your company, and then you have your publisher. Variant's the company, and their publisher is Sony. So who's getting on to them about that? So, I mean, if it's Sony jumping onto them, that's the corporate masterminds right there. That's not the developer's fault. That's the corporate's jumping on them.
Oh, one more thing. Please, guys, send emails. I mean, complain to the company. That's the only way stuff's going to get fixed Now, sending in 50 petitions isn't going to make a difference, but sending in 50 emails will.
Yeah, and I've got something to say on that, because we've looked at which emails we actually can pay attention to and which we can't pay attention to. We get about 3,500 emails a week. The best way to put your opinion in an email is to keep it short. Don't send three-page emails with 25 ideas in one email. Don't. Send one idea per email, like a short paragraph, 2-3 sentences in an email. That's the one where we can pay attention. We can see like 25 emails that all have this real quick, I hate the new orcs or something, and that'll get through. But if you send walls of text, it's really hard for the customer service team to process.
And one more thing, if you're not getting satisfaction from customer service, you do have other venues, because to be honest, the developers should be really grateful to the fans who actually care enough to take the time to say, hey, this is going wrong in game, you need to do something about this. They should really appreciate that customer took the time to do that. But if you're not getting results, email the fan sites. Email the EverQuest fan sites, the Dark Age of Camelot fan sites. Email the gaming press, sites like womengamers.com, sites like Stratix. I mean, you know, let them know that there may be a news issue here that they should report on and cover.
And that reaches a huge community. I mean, there's a GameSpy person right there. Yeah. That, I mean, it does.
Where?
But,
well, I think we're actually at a time where we're kind of gone over, but guys, thanks for coming out.
Yeah,
this we had a great talk.
Real quick, there's going to be two other gatherings.
Oh, yes, one more thing.
Yeah, tonight at 10 is a Simutronics player gathering. It's happening in the hallway out here. Tomorrow at 1 a.m. is all massively multiplayer games. Any players of any games are welcome to come here in this room. 1 a.m., huge gather.
And for those of you who are still here on Monday, 2:30 is going to be an EverQuest gathering.